Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 28. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Manye Tvam Kalam Ishanam Manari Nidhanam Vibhum Samam Chanantam Sarvatra Bhutanam Yanmita Kali. My Lord, I consider your lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. Purport, Kunti knew that Krishna was neither her nephew nor an ordinary family member of her paternal house. She knew perfectly well that Krishna is the primeval Lord who lives in everyone's heart as the super soul, Paramatma. Another name of Paramatma feature of the Lord is Kala, or eternal time. Eternal time is the witness of all our actions, good and bad, and thus resultant reactions are destined by him. It is no use saying that we do not know why and for what we are suffering. We may forget the misdeed for which we may suffer this present moment, but we must remember that Paramatma is our constant companion, and therefore he knows everything, past, present, and future. Because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, he is the supreme controller also. Without his sanction, not a blade of grass can move. Living beings are given as much freedom as they deserve, and misuse of that freedom is the cause of suffering. The devotees of the Lord do not misuse their freedom, and therefore they are the good sons of the Lord. Others who misuse freedom are put into the miseries that's destined by the eternal Kala. Kala offers the conditioned souls both happiness and miseries. It is all predestined by eternal time. As we have miseries uncalled for, so we may have happiness also without being asked, for they are all predestined by Kala. No one is therefore either an enemy or friend of the Lord. Everyone is suffering and enjoying the results of his own destiny. This destiny is made by the living entity in course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over the material nature, and thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and therefore he can see everyone's activities. Because the Lord has no beginning or end, he is also known as the eternal time, Kala. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Rapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Adadanastinam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Shrimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Dulisham Janma Janmani Vairagya Yug Bhakti Risham Payatnai Apayamam Anabhipshamandham Kripam Buriya Paradupa Duki Sanatanastam Prabhumasriyami Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vaye Vicha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Rama Hare Hare. Greetings from New Jersey. And tomorrow I will head off to Overdon, and the rest of the sanghas will be from there. I'll give the class today, but a little disclaimer. Yesterday was quite a busy day, and I'm leaving the country, and even some of the books I research, they're not with me because I have other copies in India. So the preparation was a little bit short, but I did go over it this morning. And we will speak something about these verses and hopefully some new insights. The people on the Sangha are, you know, close people with me generally. Or if they're not, just by being on the Sangha, our relationships has developed, and I therefore usually share with them, and I've been encouraged to do so, you know, the different preaching I do and the different places that I go. Yesterday was Sri Vyas Puja for my disciples, and I guess Shastri was there. I guess many of the people that are on the Sangha today were there, and I guess many weren't also, because it's mostly people who'd be in that area. Someone didn't mute their phone. There, they got it. Good. Okay. Everyone can kind of make sure they mute your phone, because you're hearing someone in the background. But I really appreciate it. It was really, you know, very, very well done. And speaking to Mahamuni yesterday, and we share one thing. We're communicators, that's our service, to conceptualize and express philosophy. And when you have that kind of brain, in one sense, or that type of mind, but it also goes, I don't know, for me, I've tried to develop an acute sense of what people understand from things. So when I go to a function, especially one where I'm responsible, I'm highly sensitive, and usually in anxiety, I'm highly sensitive, and things that don't communicate well, you know, disturbing. I'm very particular. I'm not generally particular in most aspects of life, but in this particular aspect, when it comes to functions, which seems to be one of my service, I'm pretty particular. And, practically yesterday, you know, I couldn't even find one thing I thought that was out of place. Everything was done just so thoughtfully and tastefully. And I also try to look at things and try to gather philosophical realization. So I was thinking that, you know, that's what, and well, in one sense, it's one type of expression of devotion. Just like in the spiritual world, when you look at Radharani's dress, and everything's so perfect. The environment, the flowers, the decorations, the people, the relationships. You know, because when there is an abundance of affection, then things are done nicely to please others. The spiritual world, because of the abundance of affection, the physical shape of the spiritual world is very pleasing, because it's all about love. Love means to please. If you make a room for someone and you love them, then it'll be very pleasing. And down to the love, the affection would go down to the little details, how things are made. If you cook for someone, it would go down to the little details. And, you know, there's a certain sense also that, affection becomes a teacher. It's just like a mother, you know, she has love, she becomes a good teacher. And that doesn't discount that she doesn't learn things either. That can be the impetus for learning. Therefore, even at the platform of spontaneous love, of Krishna, people still follow rules, or they do things properly. They do things that please Krishna properly. So from those standpoints, I mean, just how the space was set up, I mean, everything was just so tastefully done. The schedule, the kirtans, the cooperation among the devotees, you know, because sometimes at these functions there can be, you know, people were there for a reason and everybody happily did their part, you know, down to the cleanup. The prasad serving, which is a particular thing of mine that I like to see done, the way they had the prasad just set up, there were much about 20 preparations, and the way it was set up with, you know, all in little trays with these little burners, so things were kept hot, and the setting and how it was served out and how the space, the little garden, the backyard, how it was set up is all done finally. And the Mahahari is probably listening for with Shastra there. And, you know, Mahahari, he likes to please devotees and therefore he cooks very nicely. If you ever eat what he cooks, I hope I'm not embarrassing him. But he cooks very nicely. And his Guru Maharaj, Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, was particular in that way also, so he got good training. So him and Shastra and Henry, he was also in the Sangha, you know, they were sitting with me and nice little tables were made with little vases and flowers and very nicely done. And you know, when he eats, he doesn't only eat for himself, he wants to know how to make that preparation. So I particularly liked that he was relishing the prasad because he was trained to be a connoisseur. But it was, everything was done. And he was surprised that it was cooked by so many different people because it seemed to have like a particular style and everything. So that was nice. And that also as preachers, I thought, you know, we have to be expert at presenting things because it not only presents our devotion, it presents our consideration, our consciousness, etc. And as a preacher, you know, we have a philosophy, but we want that philosophy to be representative of our highest ideals to attract people. So you have a philosophy, but you don't present things nicely. It's hard for people to understand the philosophy. You know. Right, the Tripurari Swami's ashram was very nicely done, but the nice thing, it was a rural place. There's a certain integrity in the living, because people are living simply as monks. That also communicates something to people. Oh, the philosophy may be there, but so in ways, that's, you know, so it's nice to present things nicely. You know, oh, when you go to Chopati, you know, how nicely it's organized and everything, down to the details, the people, you know, it's just so nice. So we have to learn that art, and then because it was my disciples and they put on that function, and I'm particular, I was very happy because it communicated something, that everything was done in a very nice way. Now, up to this section in the Bhagavatam, maybe there may be more time for questions because I don't know how much I can speak today, but we'll see. And this is a wonderful section that's opening up. You know, began at the end of the Kurukshetra War. We see Krishna in the chariot. And what's emphasized there is Krishna is serving his devotees. Krishna is a person, and he's a loving person, and a loving person serves others. Serving others put ones in the subordinate position. God in the subordinate position, in terms of love of his devotees, is actually the most exalted position. It's the most exalted position. So we're seeing all these things. I don't have to go on. You've been studying with me before. And then we see Krishna leaving again after saving Uttara. And now we see the heart of Kunti. We see through her words and her feelings. the proper sentiment of a devotee. That we see the heart of one who is selfless and pure because his objective is to serve. We see that. We see the beauty of it. Reading these prayers of Queen Kunti, expressing so many beautiful thoughts out of love. Of course, that beautiful verse, Vipada Santita Shashwat Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru Babato Darsanam Yatsyat Puna Baba Darsanam. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. The seeing you means that we no longer see repeated birth. Now, we're not praying like that. I'm not praying like that. I'm praying for moksha. I'm contaminated by Gan. Let me be peaceful. So we see beautiful prayers. And before I want to discuss today's verse because I think it begins an interesting section. And it is really interesting. I just, different themes. I do that every time. I read a few verses and I try. I didn't have even my notes from previous, and that's also important. So I read it over a little bit this morning. And, you know, it's Queen Kunti, and she has devotion for Krishna, and she sees that he's the Supreme Lord. And then she sees that he's not understood. It's hard to understand him. It's very hard to understand him because he's there as her nephew, but yet he's in the womb. He says you're invisible. You can't be seen. And then Prabhupada says something in a purport. And every time I read the purport, I find something else. He gives a very nice thing, which is one of the main points here, in Queen Kunti's prayers. That we observe, even materially, we observe things under certain conditions. So what to speak in an ordinary sense, what to speak of God? People go, show me God. Well, there's certain criteria, there's certain conditions. Are those conditions set for you to perceive this phenomenon? And it's later, this whole prayers is going to be about this. She's going to go on to speak about that God has an inconceivable potency. So if something has inconceivable potency, how do you understand him by the simple laws of cause and effect? Because inconceivable potency specifically means that things do not operate under cause and effect. So things don't operate upon the way you understand things because you are subjected to certain laws. And how do you understand something that doesn't operate by the laws in which you perceive everything by definition? Because that's the object that you want to perceive is beyond those laws by definition. Inconceivable potency. So the thing, how to understand God, how to see God. And Kunti is, just like in this verse, she's praising Krishna so much, and she's a communicator. So she wants to explain, well, or even Krishna, why are you praising me? I'm just your nephew. But no, this is who you are, and this is the basis of Krishna consciousness. To understand with faith that Krishna is God. Because without that faith in Krishna is God, then how can you understand your eternal position as his devotee? Aham sarvasya prabhavo mitas sarvam pavartite iti bhutva bhajanti ma buddha bhavasa. I am the source of the material and spiritual world. The wise who know this engage in my devotional service. Buddha bhava. From Buddha or understanding comes bhava. So the Bhagavatam is to give you this Buddha, to give you this bhava. It's to give you this understanding so you can actually get this love. Sambandha gyan, an understanding of the world and how things interrelate properly, including the phenomena of God, matter, and spirit and how they interact. That's essential to understand, not only to understand the sambandha or relationship between the energies of God so that you can actually understand God properly, but when that matures fully, that manifests into the sambandha or relationship with God. So it's important to understand the position of God. So we observe things under certain conditions. One, the senses. It has to be certain proper conditions. And Prabhupada gives the example of the ears not having the condition to understand the sound, the dog not having the condition of the ears, the auditory function. No, we don't have the ear, the proper hearing capacity, the proper conditions to hear certain sounds, which a dog can hear. There's a dog whistle. It means the dog hears it. We don't hear it. And it's like that with all the senses. So there's a condition of the senses, and there's a condition of attitude. This place where Kastuba established this Radha Damodar deities, evidently there's famous people that go to that yoga studio. So somehow yesterday or 2 days ago, on Thursday night, presumably gives an incredible Bhagavad Gita class in that studio, which I went to. I wanted to go to it. It was phenomenal, his abilities. So the next morning, the teacher said, you can come for a lesson. And I tried to be considerate, you know, although he would accommodate me. So he said, well, the best time for me is 9. So I thought it would be like the last time. There was hardly anybody there, but it was packed. So when I was doing it, he was sitting with me privately, but it was still every space and people. So, you know, when I finished, Kastuba said, do you know that guy to the right of you? You know, he said, you know, laying next to you and you do, you know, resting after that. He was this famous actor. You know, he was this famous actor. And I've been out of the loop for so long, but his name was something, William Defoe or something like this. Everybody is very famous and people like that. But I was thinking, I may have saw him, you know, but it was like what Kunti said, you know, in a disguise. Probably an old man in shorts, you know. I probably saw him, you know, but I didn't see him as rich and famous because I didn't, you know, so my attitude was different. I didn't know, you see, you know, some of his opulences or power. And I may have thought this is just some kind of, because, you know, you have impressions. I may have thought something else. What to speak if you have an attitude of envy, thought some. So the attitude, the consciousness, that's there, Papa said, under certain material conditions. And if you want to know a person, you have to love a person. Because if you want to know a person has to give himself to you. If he doesn't give himself to you, you know very little about him. And no one will give oneself to another who doesn't love him. And therefore, premanjana charita bhakti valo chenena sankasadaiva hideyeshu valo. You understand people in terms of relationship. That's the whole Bhagavatam philosophy. If you want to understand God, you have to have a relationship with him. That makes sense. And therefore, Kunti, in her beautiful prayer, says, Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nandagopa Kumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. That was the first point. And then, you know, in Kunti also, this point of explaining, in terms of that relationship, the Lord shows more favor to the devotees in need. In other words, we're in need. It's really a matter of consciousness. And ahankar, or pride, makes us think that we're separate. but we're not, we don't need shelter, we're not independent, but it's a matter of consciousness. But sometimes to impel or help that consciousness, then Krishna puts us in positions of need so that we can realize our position of need. So that's another theme that, you know, Kunti is expressing, and it has a lot to do with what happens to us in the material world. It's trying to help us realize that we're dependent on Krishna. And then all those beautiful verses, Vipada Shantuta, let the calamities happen again and again, Janmaishvarya, Shruta Sibhir, Edhamana Madhapulan, you can be approached, but only those who are materially exhausted. Understand, we are actually all are materially exhausted. And when it was on the path, the material progress with birth, Janma, Aishwa, Shruta, Shridhya, they cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So you're the property of those who don't possess anything else. They want that, that you're the property of those people. And now I didn't have that much time. We come to this verse 28 today. And I'm going to discuss that a little bit and open up to questions, because I didn't get the chance to prepare as much as I want. But my Lord, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you're equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. So two things. One, in anticipation of the question why you are praising Krishna. I thought you were just the son of Devaki. This is the answer. No, there's something else here. This is who you are. But in describing what Krishna is, because the other verses are talking about material exhaustion, property of the material impoverished, let the calamities happen again and again. It's also an explanation of to help people understand God. It's actually, in one sense, it's theodicy. How to explain this inconceivable Lord and the suffering that exists in the world. So here it has to be, because Queen Kunti is suffering so much. Okay, she's praying for them, but what is the business with this suffering in the world? You know, and what is it? And is there partiality? Is there partiality? Why are people suffering so much? Some people suffer more, some people suffer less. So what is happening? So it's explaining, Prabhupada said, no one is therefore an enemy or friend. Everyone is suffering the result of his own destiny. The purport, this purport is one of the most beautiful explanations of karma. And to really understand karma, you have to understand that what karma is, or what destiny is a manifestation of the Paramatma. Prabhupada directly says here that the Paramatma, another nature, the name of the Paramatma is Kala, or eternal time. So there's a witness of our activities. And then there's a movement of the world according to our past activities to teach us lessons, purify our consciousness, and help us to grow. And that's at that time. And therefore, the dissensions that are caused, this Kali, the hardship, the dissensions are caused by the interaction, by our social intercourse. Our social intercourse, how we relate with others and other things and the environment, especially our social intercourse, it reveals our consciousness. And God is witnessing that. But he's not witnessing so much the actions, but what they say about us. And when he sees that we are acting antithetical to the blissful natural position of the soul as Krishna's servant, then he makes or creates circumstances to help us understand that this kind of consciousness or action that's an attitude of ahankara and the manifestations of ahankara, or the conception, I mean, during controller, that it is against our swartha. What is that? Ye vidu swartha katin hi Vishnu. You should know, ye vidum swartha katin hi Vishnu, that the goal in our interest is to serve Krishna. Someone just unmuted their phone. I can hear them, or they just came on and they didn't mute their phone. That's six, thank you. So people don't know. So here, so a very interesting point, the dissensions between are due to social intercourse. All the difficulty, the troubles, due to social, and Prabhupada says what that means, the destiny is made by the living entity in course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over material nature. Everyone creates his own destiny. And therefore, due to that, due to the activity, God is compassionate, seeing through our actions and dealings specifically with others, what are the attitudes, desires, and understandings in that soul that is antithetical or incongruent with his nature as a soul and therefore causing him suffering. The ultimate suffering is ahankara, the attitude of controller enjoyer, because it's against the soul. That's what I like. And Socrates apologetic. Obviously he seemed to be a self-realized soul when he's condemned to die. You know, and he wants to face his accusers, the Senate, and he speaks. And he gives them a dressing down. And he say in his theme, if you want to kill me, understand you won't harm me, you'll only harm yourself. Because you will be acting against the soul. When you act unvirtuous, it's against the soul. You'll be harming yourselves. And I will be responding of the soul, and I will therefore be helping myself. I will be growing spiritually, and this is what you'll be not. So what a beautiful, beautiful purport about karma. And it's so nice. I'm going to read it again and just see how Prabhupada covers all the points, and so does Kunti in this. Kunti knew that Krishna was neither her nephew nor an ordinary family member of a paternal house. She knew perfectly well that Krishna is the primeval Lord who lives in everyone's heart as the Supersoul Paramatma. Another name of the Paramatma feature of the Lord is Kala, or eternal time. Eternal time is the witness of all our actions, good and bad, and thus resultant reactions are destined by him. It is no use saying that we do not know why and for what we are suffering. We may forget the misdeed for which we may suffer at this present moment. But we must remember that Paramatma is our constant companion, and therefore he knows everything, past, present, and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, he is the supreme controller also. Without his sanction, not a blade of grass can move. Living beings are given as much freedom as they deserve, and misuse of that freedom is the cause of suffering. The devotees of the Lord do not misuse their freedom, and therefore they are the good sons of the Lord. Others who misuse freedom are put into miseries destined by eternal Kala. The Kala offers the conditioned souls both happiness and misery. It is all predestined by eternal time. As we have miseries uncalled for, so we may have happiness also without being asked. For these are the predestined by Kala. No one is therefore either an enemy or friend of the Lord. Happiness comes, distress comes. Happiness is not being favored, distress is not being favored, because ultimately we are the cause. And that when Marge Prickett saw that the bull was being beaten and said, who is the perpetrator? The bull would not identify the perpetrator, and therefore Marge Prickett said, you must be Dharma. You must be the personification of religion, because the personification of religion means to recognize God. And understand that the sufferings that happen are actually caused by us. This destiny is made by the living beings in the course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over the material nature, and thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and therefore he can see everyone's activities. Because the Lord has no beginning or end, he's also known as eternal time, Kala. And the rest of the verses will also describe these particular points. Same point, that you, no one can understand the Supreme Lord, who's appearing as a human being. Oh Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, who appear to be human and so misliving. You have no object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. And his partiality is, this. In this verse, what's his partiality? Is he's giving mercy, but you become the receptacle. You become the receptacle to God's mercy. God's mercy is always there. But you become the receptacle, and then you experience it. But it's not that it's just like the father is impartial. But one son is receptacle to his orders and his direction and his love, and one son is independent. But the father, if he's a pure soul, not, you know, like God is pure soul, what does it mean? It means that if he sees everyone equally, all are my sons. But this son is not receptive, and therefore he needs this response, and this son is receptive, he needs this response. But they're seeing equally, just like in Bhagavad Gita. Vidyavini sampane brahmani gobi haishkini suni chaiva sapak pandita samadarshana. A pandit, he sees equally. The elephant, the dog eater, etc. He doesn't deal with them equally. But he sees them all equally. Equally means they're all spirit soul. They're just in different conditions of attitude and consciousness. And therefore, as a spirit soul, I will treat this one this way, I will treat this one this way, I will treat this one this way, but I'm treating them all equally with compassion and love as a spirit soul. So, it's going to explain this. I'm just going ahead quickly. Of course, it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work, though you are inactive, that you take birth, though you are a vital force in the unbeaten, you yourself descend amongst animals, men, and say, verily, this is bewildering. What is inconceivable potency? Can't be understood, therefore, in that way. But by the mercy of the internal potency, the Lord's potency, then you understand. And then the most bewildering thing is Krishna. In the next verse, he gets tied up by his mother. Even though he is this Kala, he's time, etc. This side is bewildering. So that you can see a commonality in all these verses. It is the philosophical point is how to understand God, and how difficult it is empirically, analytically, to purely understand his nature, if that analysis and vision tries to illogically judge him by how the laws in this world work. Okay, I'm stopping early because I didn't prepare those other verses. I just went over them briefly. Would anyone like to ask a question?
Marsh?
Yeah.
It's Mahamuni.
Thank you so much, Mooney.
Thanks for your class today. Prabhu Prabhu and I were wondering if you'd be giving class after such a long day yesterday, so thank you for giving class anyway, despite being probably tired. I appreciate your class a lot, Maharaj, and a number of things come to mind, but I guess the one I'll ask you is this. Earlier in the class, you were talking about the fact that it's our attitude, or at least one of the major factors that allow us to recognize God is our attitude.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like the Bhagavad Gita says, without bhakti, you can't know God, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I wholeheartedly embrace this. I intellectually understand it, and I try to practice it. But I think that there are people who are very reasonable, who are very, they have a real fear about this kind of idea.
Right.
The reason I think they're afraid of it is that you can use it to justify almost anything. And so I'll give you an example. Let's say I'm a Scientologist and I believe that the evil interplanetary god Xenu, it might attack sometime soon.
Yeah.
And someone says to me, come on, why do you? How can that be true? And I say, well, you just don't have enough devotion to L. Ron Hubbard. And if you had enough bhakti for L. Ron Hubbard, you'd be it too. So it seems to be the kind of thing that could seal off any belief from rational scrutiny. And so I want to offer that. I want to ask you how you respond to that.
Let's discuss that. Let's discuss that as much as my brain will be working today. But I'll try. Well, obviously we have pramana. You know, let's put it this way. First, in terms of the attitude, anyone can say that, but it doesn't discount the point. In other words, it's two different points. One point is what is true or not, right? And another point is how do you know that thing which is true, how do you know it? So what we're saying here is that thing which is true, the way you know it, if it's a person, is through love and relationship and your attitude, and it affects perception, and this is a fact. I think it's another basis, what is true. We're just talking about the method of understanding something, and the premise is that it is God, it is real. How do you understand it? Well, if it is real, and there is a God, and you know who God is, then how do you understand it? This is the method. But it's not an argument for saying, well, this proves what God is, proves. Then there's another realm that's called pramana, or evidence. You know, there's a method of knowing. It's two separate things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I understand that, so what you're saying is, even though the point can be misapplied, let's just talk about whether it's a reasonable point or not in general or something.
That's the point. I mean, is this how you understand certain phenomena? Is it a fact? You know?
Okay, so let's... I'll take the role of the skeptic. I grant that to you. Let's just say hypothetically...
One second. It's a crazy day today, but I just have to... One second. Yeah.
I want to get you to close your...
I'm on the phone. I'll be with you. Okay. No, there's so much going on. But anyway...
Is it hard?
Say what you were saying. As the skeptic,
Let's say this, because again... Not that I agree with the skeptic, but I think there's a reasonable point that we have to address. So they say, okay, fine. Let's say I grant to you that in some cases, if you're trying to know a person, you need to know them by developing a relationship. That still doesn't leave, you know, you're claiming that you have Krishna and that's the truth. This guy's claiming the L. Ron Hubbard story and that you have to know that truth.
I think, isn't there a difference? We're not talking about whether the existence of something. We're talking about the full revelation of that something. So if someone, you know, posits a a conception that this is the absolute reality. It's, you know, I'm starting with the premise of, you know, I'm starting with the premise here that, you know, here there's God, there's Krishna here. Now, if you want to understand him fully, right, in other words, it's not a question that it's existing there, but to understand him fully, you know, it's through love or revelation in terms of relationship. But I think there's other pramanas or evidences to determine whether that is true, you know, whether the existence is true or not. Who is God? You know, we don't just go, okay, but, you know, devotion and there, you know, but there's evidence. We argue in terms of Shastra Praman. You know, where is it stated in the Shastra? And we argue. And we argue why this particular, you know, Shastra is Pramana. You know, so it's an elaborate, you know, epistemology. Now, if you talk with Ron Hubbard, you know, we would want to know also what is their tradition, et cetera, if it's a separate revelation, et cetera. You know, there's criteria that make things credible, you know, and, you know the authority. You know, like for example, you know, we may argue through the Vedas, but in terms of the Vedas, it's not just us that accept the Vedas. You know, it's not just the Krishna Bhaktas that accept the Vedas. It's a pretty established authoritative thing. Now, if someone comes up with a science fiction writer and, you know, wants to argue that it has the same credibility as the Vedic knowledge, you know, I would say there's a little bit more weight to something that has such a, you know, a wide acceptance of scholarship and schools of thought, you know, and the body of knowledge itself. So I still think it's a little bit different, unless I'm not getting you.
No, I think what you're saying, it makes a lot of sense.
And I don't mind. Yeah, go ahead.
Part of me thinks, though, I don't know, Marsh, part of me thinks I think that the reason we believe in the Vedas is because we believe that Prabhupada had bhakti. I almost feel like when you look at people like us who were converted to become devotees, when it comes down to it, the reason we believe the whole story about the Vedas and that the best interpretation of the Vedas is that Krishna is God is not because we researched the Vedas, it's because we believe that Prabhupada had direct spiritual experience because he had bhakti. So to me, it comes back to this point that bhakti is the method of knowing God.
I'm picking up, but I pick up another thing. But the reason, maybe why we, you know, but the reason why we accept, you know, with Prabhupada's revelation, but the same sense, it wasn't that Prabhupada was just referring to some obscure something.
Yeah,
he was referring to a tradition, and I'm saying that's the difference. But ultimately, you know, bhakti or devotion, it's an argument that if it does exist, it's a reasonable conception that this was how one would understand something that's so far beyond one, you know. And I think if I look at the book, now remembering there's something in the, I closed my book, but I'm going to open it up. There was something in one of the purports, you know, describe this. Let me just read a purport. Let's see how this sits with us.
Sure.
I don't even know if it proves or disproves. The transcendental pastimes of the Lord are not only bewildering, but also apparently contradictory. In other words, they are all inconceivable by the limited power of the human being. The Lord is all-pervading supersoul of all existence, yet appears in so many forms. He has manifold energy. All these statements. Anyway. I get too long. Okay. Mooney, you want to go further on this?
No,
what do you want to say? Fine.
There's just something in the back of my head that just came up.
Yeah.
Lately, I've been reading debates between Nyaya school and the Mimamsa school about where the Vedas get their authority.
Yeah.
Like, long story short, Nyaya says that the Vedas get their authority because they're crafted by God. Whereas Mimamsa says that, no, the Vedas are eternal. They're not crafted by God. There is no God anyway. And so the Mimamsas kind of argue that the Nyaya people, just like we say sometimes, like foolish Christians or foolish whatever devotees do, they think that Nyaya is arguing in a circle. Like, I believe in God because of the Vedas, and I believe the Vedas because of God making them. And Nyaya's response, which is what I'm getting at, which I think is very reasonable, is they say, no, we don't believe in the Vedas because God wrote them. We believe in the Vedas because those things which we can experience in our kind of ordinary life, where we're guided by the Vedas, seem to work out. And so we trust the Vedas as an authority, just because it works in matters of medicine and stuff like that. And so therefore, we also trust that it's about God is true, too. And so I guess, I'm sorry, did I go on too
far? Yeah, good point. No, go.
So I think that the point that they're making, which it seems relevant to me, is that trust often has to do with, when it comes down to your immediate experience, does it work for you? And does it guide you well in the things that you can perceive? And I think that for many of us, why do we trust Gita or why do we trust Srila Prabhupada is, well, on some level, it kind of made sense of our experience in our world and in our struggle, so that gives us more of an impetus to trust it when it talks about that other faraway stuff.
I think that's exactly the point, and I think it's a main way in which people come to Krishna consciousness, that you have a body of knowledge that, in other words, you start with some premises, you know, some principles of life that you see as truths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I someone said that, and a good teacher or a good tradition, when they can increase your understanding of reality and therefore enable you to understand it and live in it more effectively, obviously you develop faith. It's like the same thing as you go to a doctor. You know, you have some understanding of something, you know. It may be really bad. You shouldn't overeat or what, you know. But, you know, when you go to someone who's actually, let's say, you know, knows about health and starts telling you things, right, that builds your understanding and therefore of the body and health, you know, and therefore enables it actually achieves the practical results. Yeah, your faith increases. And then the other things, then you it gives credence that, yes, this is an authoritative body of knowledge, and we can extend it more, even to things we don't know. Yeah. I think that makes sense a lot. Yeah.
And I don't want to take up too much time.
No, it's good.
But that kind of point now makes me think about things that I've heard you mention a lot lately, that when, like, I know we talk about quote-unquote institutions or something, and I don't want to go on a long discussion about that, but an important point seems to be that when groups become insular and they can only speak their own language and they can only relate to people who are like them, it's very hard to convince other people that we can help you on your terms.
Exactly.
So anyway.
Yeah. That's yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Marsha.
No, Muni, that was really helpful. Yes. Thank you. Any other questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Gail, Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I don't know how much time we'll have, but I did have a few questions.
Yes.
One was, I just wanted to confirm, actually.
Speak louder, please.
I wanted to confirm that this point about the fact that we cannot understand Krishna, you know, and when that point is made, you know, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are usually brought in, you know?
Or what?
Lord Brahma.
Yeah.
And Lord Shiva are usually used as examples of this fact.
Right.
You know, and so I just want to confirm that when it is said that we cannot understand Krishna, what is meant is that we cannot understand Krishna independently of his mercy or just intellectually. It doesn't mean that, you know, if we even develop love, we cannot understand him. I mean, in other words, you can understand Krishna, but you need love. You need to have love for him in order to do that. I mean, we can't understand him intellectually, and we can't understand him also, like Queen Kunti says, just based, you know, because we're, you know, we're coming from our frame of reference of our experience in this world, you know. But we can understand Krishna if we do have love for him. Is that correct?
Let me just, yes, and what it, but in other words, you can understand the existence of a person, but not understand the person. And, you know, so there's a certain sense, there's in the second canto, a kind of like I think I'm in the center canto, how you can understand the super soul by your reasoning, etc. But how much you know about the super soul, how much you know about Krishna, yeah, that depends on love. But even in terms of love, I forgot who said this when I was with my godbrother Bhakti Madhava Puri Maharaj, who's a scientist, and he was talking about Hegel or something, or you know, or and something that, you know, God is not being, but it's becoming. So how do you understand something, right, that is not static? You know, when we talk about understanding things, we talk about understanding things that are static and fixed, that you can measure. Mm-hmm. You know, but how do you understand something that's becoming, not just being? So, in one sense, you can understand God by love, but even Krishna doesn't understand Radharani because she's always increasing, and Radharani doesn't understand Krishna because he's always increasing. So I think there's a difference between kind of understanding in terms of a certain existence and understanding fully. And that has different levels.
And so when Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are brought in as examples, what are they actually trying to say about, you know, understanding?
Like enunciation. With all my heads, I cannot glorify the supreme love, because his glories are always increasing. And, you know, it means that their understanding is limited without relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your understanding of anyone is limited without relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If someone turns me off, I choose not to reveal myself to them. And therefore, they'll know very little about me. And is that true here? That's true there. Okay, Gail?
Do I have time?
What? What's that?
I was wondering if there was time for one more.
Okay, one more, and then I just want to greet everybody and then get on with the day. Go ahead.
Okay. This is something that comes up, you know, from time to time. You know, the fact that, you know, the purpose of, you know, Kala's reactions to our deeds,
yeah,
you know, is for,
yeah,
our purification. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, in, you know, ordinary conversations, you know, it often comes up, you know, how can getting these reactions actually help us when we don't remember what we did.
Okay, I'll just answer that really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. If you are several ways. One, if let's say you're experiencing some type of exploitation, right? It's actually externalizing what's in you, so you can actually see it. And because you're not the perpetrator but the victim of it, you'll tend to see it more objectively. You'll tend to see that, yeah, I don't like this. What we're not liking is in you. That's one thing. The other thing is, when you're in difficulty and you're in the proper culture and you have the proper sukriti, you consult people who have knowledge. And you'll understand, even if you don't remember what you've done, you'll understand it's not just a question of forget what you did in your past life. The consciousness that caused you what to do in your past life is still within you. And if you're honest, you'll be able to see that. And when things happen externally to you in the proper circumstance with the proper association, you'll understand that. So I don't think you have to remember, I did this particular thing. If that particular thing that you did is happening to you, and you understand something about the philosophy, you'll see it within yourself. And what you'll be seeing within yourself is what caused the action, what you did in the previous life. It's not important to remember what the action is. We're talking about the change of consciousness.
So people who don't see that they have that within themselves, they're just...
What's that?
People who do not see that within themselves,
they're
feeling so much, you know, enmity toward the person who did this thing.
Yeah, right.
If they don't see that within themselves, then they're simply just not being honest with themselves. About who they are.
They're not being honest, and they may not be getting the lesson, but still they're experiencing something in general about the root of it all, which is the ahankara or the false ego. They're experiencing something. It hurts. It hurts to be the controller. It hurts to be the enjoyer. My life is being restricted. Okay, Gail, I may have to speak to you sometime else before I go. Let's see.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Rasagya calling from Austin.
Rasagya, thank you so much. I was very humbled by your beautiful offering yesterday.
Oh, thank you. I
think it was Jaini Thai or someone who read it.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. I wanted to thank you especially for this class today because I've been going through some really difficult time with some devotees here. It just brought to light, giving another vision of it. So it'll be very helpful.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but as you said, it's actually really good. And I always remember that verse that the devotee is expecting Krishna's mercy. And it's like pruning my rose bush here.
Ooh, okay.
When these difficult situations come up, you get to see things that aren't always visible within yourself.
Oh, thank you.
So, or I should say within myself. The narcas that come up, and especially in terms of, aspiring for selfless service, and then maybe doing too much. You know, finding the boundary of where service is required and where it isn't required.
Uh-huh, that's
which
interesting.
Comes down to really controlling again.
Wow. No, it's life's all about lessons, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Sure is.
Ultimately, it's about love, but...
It's about love, and I thought, too, whatever not nice feelings I'm feeling at the moment because of anger, I get to see that it's not going to get resolved unless I see the loving part.
Wow, yeah.
So I really appreciate it.
I'm telling you, it's tough. It's very tough.
It's very tough.
And, you know, the same sense, protecting your own self. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I sure do.
You know, there's a certain amount of self-esteem we require. You know, certain things that we require also, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it to put it all together, it's good. Well, I hope it works out for the best.
Yeah, I do too. And this has been a big help today. Thank you.
Thank you, Rasagya, so much.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Hare Bol. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Hare Kirtan.
Hey, Hare Kirtan. Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.
Thank you. Nice to hear from you. Yeah, go ahead.
I suspect that I, reading between the lines and thinking back, I need to make an adjustment to my calendar. I will have to speak to one of your disciples to make sure that I make that adjustment for next year.
About four? Oh, I didn't get it.
I missed something.
Oh.
I have missed.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
I will make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. Good. I'm sorry about that, but good. Thank you.
My fault.
We'll make note. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Bal, Maharaj. Baladev.
Hey, Baladev. Hare Bal.
Hi.
See you in India.
Yeah.
Thank you. Did you get the prasad?
Yeah, it was great.
Okay. Good.
Late.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you did it as service. We wanted you to have it, but Mahahari really, it was so much cooked, you know?
Yeah.
Mahahari, he served out all the devotees that were serving, and then there was so much, you know, and they already had these takeaway containers. That's what I'm saying. All the details were done so nicely, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to look. There were already these nice takeaway containers, so he was able to fill it with the different items.
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically told him if he can bring it back to, of course, that maybe the Guru Maharaj could honor some, but there, you know, yourself and Talat Priya and Tiger Rung and all you guys can also get some. So great. Thank you.
Peace.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hello.
Hare Krishna, this is Carl.
Hey, Carl. Thank you for hanging on there yesterday with us.
I just wanted to say how much we appreciate, you know, those of us who can't be there, being able to listen in and feel that at least on some small level we're able to participate in that. It's really wonderful.
Well, thank you. And can I tell you, the devotees that were there really appreciated that I let them know of the greater audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They were so, like, you know, let's say Henry and Jaini Tai and Sabre, you know, and Jai Subhadra and Govardhan Lal, you know, people like that. I said, oh, you know, Carl and Stella and, you know, like Prem Bhakti Marg and, you know, her friends and were there too. And, you know, so when they heard, they really appreciated it. So that it worked out both ways. Thank you.
Well, like the Sangha of Vyasa Puja is going on all around the world.
Well, thank you. It was really nicely done.
Yeah.
It was great.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, we'll end it for now, and next Wednesday night and Sunday we'll be calling from Govardhan.